No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it.
Hello, and welcome to Know You Tell It, a hybrid story incubator slash performance series. Each Know You Tell It participant develops their own nonfiction piece on the page, then switches with a partner to perform each other's work on stage. Because nothing informs your story like hearing someone else perform your story.
Starting out the second half of our No Vacancy show, Sydney Beveridge learns that the space between two college roommates is often more than the physical 12 feet separating their single beds. Here's Liz Simons reading Sydney's story, brochure worthy.
On a hot August morning, Mom and Dad drive me in a carload of essential and not so essential stuff to suburban Philadelphia. I hold the fat envelope that gives me entry into a special little Quaker college full of quirky overachievers, bold squirrels, and manicured lawns. I cradle dreams of what college will be like in my shower caddy, tucking anticipation between my new extra long twin sheets. The envelope contains shiny brochures with pictures of people smiling and dancing around together awkwardly. The images don't entirely endear me to the small liberal arts vibe, but I will give it a shot. I made significant progress since my elementary school days when I would spend recess periods in the company of a My Little Pony doll. My toy companion and I would walk around the field picking up cigarette butts and pieces of trash instead of playing with other kids. I branched out by high school, started eating lunch with other people who rarely teased me, and even chatting with friends on the phone, back when people did that sort of thing. Sure, I still hadn't even been on a date, but college would bring me into a new community. I pick up my dorm key, wander down the zigzag hallway, and find room 116. An admissions committee decided I would come to this college. My answers on the basic roommate questionnaire, messy, neater, in between, determined what type of person I'd live with. The housing office administrator decreed exactly who that would be. Legend has it, she has amused herself by pairing up the tallest and shortest jocks and putting Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John together in a freshman quad fit for the four apostles. I open the door and Corina is already there, starting to unpack. She and her mom say hello to me and my mom. She says she's from Portland, Oregon, which she quickly informs me should be pronounced Oregon. I've been to summer camp. I've gone to sleepovers and only had to call my parents to pick me up early a couple of times. Sure, I'm an only child, so all my little ponies are mine. But I can share, and I think I can be a good roommate. My housemates for the past 18 years, aka my parents. Say farewell and wish me luck. Corina and I launch into college side by side, sleeping and breathing just 12 feet apart from each other in our perfectly symmetrical room. We make our beds and get ready for our first dinner. As often happens, your college dorm becomes its own little village. Each hall travels together as a pack to meals, to the parties depicted in the brochures, into the lounge to braid each other's hair. The first building block of that hall tribe unit is a roommate pair. But pretty early on, Corina and I fall out of sync. No waiting for each other to walk down to lunch, no good mornings or good nights, no private jokes between us, just quiet. The 12 feet between us grows. My toes hang off the edge of the extra long bed. I don't fit in room 116. I start to get pushed out of the hall pack, and I'm off on my own. I'm not picking up litter during lunch period anymore, but I occasionally amble down to the dining hall and sit alone reading while conversations bubble around me. Corina and I are in the same English literature class, and sometimes even walk over together. We sit in the same classroom learning to express ourselves in written and oral forms. Then we return to our own room and stay silent. Soon we trade more words by email than in person. I aced calculus in high school. I struggled with calculus in college. She is taking ancient Greek. She's failing ancient Greek. I still haven't gone on a date. Her parents are selling the Nissan SUV. We learn these things about each other from what we overhear on the phone and down the hall, never by confiding in one another. My home never feels comfortable when I am always nervous we're about to step on each other's toes. She shouts at me for filing my nails over the carpet. When her friends pop by, I feel like I should leave. She's even more of a night owl than I am, working on her papers into the wee hours by the glow of her computer screen. I wonder if I make too much noise during the day. Is there something else I'm doing that bugs her? I can't quite be myself there unless I keep to myself. She's firmly on the inside of the Hallowell first floor clique. Her position fortified by the fact that the RA has a huge crush on her. I can't talk to him about our roommate conflict since mediation from such a love-struck counselor would not work in my favor. Outside of the room, I'm doing okay in my classes, other than calculus. Instead of gaining the freshman 15, I somehow lose a few pounds, at least until I discover the dining hall's bottomless ice cream bar. Spending more and more time off the hall, I hang out with Diana and Aaron in the neighboring dorm and Kayla and Bethany upstairs. I get a show on the college radio station, my own little space for sonic exploration, every Tuesday from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. Twice a week, I pant up and down the court in intramurals basketball as my team clumsily sweats its way to winning the championship. I join the Environmental Issues Club, plotting campaigns bigger than just picking up stray cigarette butts. I watch other people flirt with other people. Each day, I return alone to my quiet room where nobody talks, but nobody fights either. Corina and I never air our grievances. We never learn if we see things the same way or differently. We stay cut off from each other. Then came the goldfish cracker incident. Hold on, that needs to... One day after class, I'm rummaging around my piles of stuff to find my beloved crunchy snack. It's not on the shelf over my desk, so I check in the cubby underneath my bed, but still no luck, so I keep digging. Corina sees me on my fishing expedition and says, "Oh no, Seth and I ate your goldfish crackers. I was going to buy you a new bag, but didn't get around to it yet. I'm so sorry." "Oh, that's okay," I say twice. Both of us careful to walk on eggshells mixed with crispy crackers. She buys me a new bag from the school bookstore and decorates with a little blue ribbon. Maybe this is a peace offering that will bring us together. Then something in the room starts to smell. We keep the windows open and the fan on high to air out the moldy funk. Turns out it's my plant. The one I got on the first day of college is an orientation gift from the school's arboretum, also featured in the shiny brochures. I hesitate to throw it away, fearing it might be a leafy metaphor for my college experience, but I get rid of it and the smell is gone. Relief. Until the RA suggests I move out of the room. He explains that sometimes roommate situations just don't work out. As the already ostracized party, it makes sense that I pick up my shower caddy and take up refuge in a vacant bed elsewhere on campus. I speak to two prospective roommates on the phone, one with a boyfriend who visits every weekend, and one who lives in a dorm far from campus center. Either one sounds great. But how enthusiastic will she be when I show up on her doorstep to fill the empty half of the room? Corina breaks her silence to say, she'll help me pack. I thank her for the offer, but fear that moving into someone else's room will impose on the new person's home and risk alienating her too. Plus, if I move out, Corina gets her own room, and this only child has to draw the line somewhere. We pause the discussion over winter break. Her boyfriend visits from out of town. He and I make light small talk. I take my shower caddy down the hall and bunk with a couple of other freshman ladies for a few days. These particular roommates aren't best buddies either, but I notice they still talk to one another. I realize the silence between Corina and me is strange. Even roommates that don't get along still chit-chat before bed, ask each other questions or favors, and even laugh together. If this is a class on human behavior, I'm more confused by it than calculus. The day her boyfriend leaves for home, he presents me with a card thanking me for so generously giving them privacy. He attaches a gourmet lollipop to the envelope, one of those expensive, two-flavored ones. She gets laid, and I get a lollipop. A statement that sums up more of my college experience than I'd like to admit. But maybe the lollipop is magical. His visit relieves a lot of tension in our room. Corey and I agree to ride out the rest of the year together. Room 116 isn't comfortable, but I know what it's like and I understand it well enough to work around it. I create a self-imposed social quarantine, but at least I have a great location and a beautiful view out of the big bay window. I still wonder why Corina and I don't get along. What's behind the tension? Is it me? Is it her? Walking down the hall one evening, I overhear her talking with another friend of ours through the door. I listen as she asks Corina why we don't get along. What's up with that? I strain to hear Corina's answer, but the door muffles it and protects me from the truth. I don't know her well enough to guess her answer, and I don't know how I would answer the question either. After finals are done, friends and roommates embrace and wish each other good summers. She tiptoes out before dawn for a flight to Portland, Oregon, leaving behind a note asking me to return a few library books for her. Our indifferent farewell. Sophomore year, I land a tiny single room on a notoriously gross hall full of cigarette smoke and wannabe frat guys. Well, the small liberal arts college equivalent. Corina and I never live in the same dorm or have another class together. There are only 350 people in our year, but we don't see each other except for the occasional glance in the dining hall. 9 years later, I get a Facebook message from Corina. I read it while eating in my East Village studio apartment, living at some approximation of the dream, complete with ample snacks, radio, and even some dates, plus a couple of robust houseplants. She asks how I'm doing and says I should swing by for a visit if I'm ever in North Carolina. She lives with her fiancé and a collection of sweet-looking dogs that she rescued from a shelter. There are exclamation points. She also sends a friend request. One click and we are officially friends. I ponder how to write her back. I could say, so nice to hear from you. though I was also a little surprised given that our roommate experience was unnecessarily tense, uncomfortable, nasty, alienating, made me question my ability to cohabitate with anyone. In recent years, it even made me nervous about moving in with my boyfriend, though looking back, it also inspired me to explore more communities and activities to stay busy. I'm grateful that the next year I was able to hang out with a new crop of freshman ladies on my hall, a do-over of sorts, and I'm heartened that my grad school roommate and I still trade notes on our favorite Thai restaurant, cupcake place, and TV show. I have years of experience running software trainings, speaking up for myself at work, putting myself out there through on stage and on the air, but I hesitate to write her back. Even with 9 years and hundreds of miles between us, I'm still very wary of asserting myself with her. I scrapped that note. But I do want to say something about that freshman year experience. I settle on calling it awkward and then wish her well. She writes back, acknowledging the awkwardness and sincerely hoping that any resentments have dissipated. She says she hopes to see me at the reunion. There is smiley face. The next summer, I go to our 10-year reunion with a fresh haircut and without that extra ice cream bar 15. At lunch, Corina and I end up at the same table, munching on her pasta salad and cookies. People start to leave, and soon it's just Corina and me. Two former roommates sitting at lunch together. A brochure-worthy reunion seems so normal to anyone who saw it, but so new to us. We sit almost knee-to-knee on folding chairs and chat about exploring the campus, the beautiful weather, and New York City neighborhoods. We get to know each other a little more. We do not become real friends. I don't have the urge to run away and pick up litter. My freshman year roommate experience taught me a few lessons. I learned how to pronounce Oregon. I learned that you should always hide your most prized snacks. There may be a box of Girl Scout Thin Mints planted somewhere in my apartment right now. And sometimes people just don't like you. But, and this second part took longer to learn, that's okay. Sometimes people just don't like you, and that's okay. It could be anyone, your coworker who contradicts you at meetings, your date sitting across from you at dinner, or even your boyfriend's cat. And they may not even have a particular reason for it. You've probably done nothing wrong. To realize someone doesn't like you can be devastating. At the same time, it can be liberating. I can let go of wondering why. I can let go of trying to win you over. I can let go of doubting myself. There are sentiments the school can't capture in those brochures full of smiling people. But maybe they should try. College. Sometimes people just don't like you. But, and that's okay.
Finally, the occasion of a 10-year college reunion creates some possibly unmeetable sexpectations in Liz Simon's story, Not Great Expectations, read by Sydney Beveridge.
2011 marked my 10-year college reunion. It also marked a decade of being broke. This was not the outcome I expected. I grew up in upper-middle-class suburbia in Massachusetts. I had a car in high school, a hand-me-down Geo Prism named Precious. I wore Champion sweatshirts and Gap jeans. I didn't grow up with a silver spoon, Just a nice wooden one that my mother probably bought on sale at Williams-Sonoma. The day after Christmas. We like nice stuff, but only if it were cheap. I was on the math team, but also started smoking cigarettes in secret starting my senior year. I graduated number 2 in my class and enrolled at Duke, the same weekend that Princess Diana got into her fatal car crash. This was the pre-omniscient internet days, and I remember walking from frat party to frat party asking, "Did Princess Di die? Did Princess Di die?" Oh, college. The next 4 years were spent studying English, partying, and not having sex. I gained 40 pounds and graduated a virgin. I moved back home with my parents, where I spent a year in my childhood bedroom that had not changed since I was 13, complete with Luke Perry and Jason Priestley posters from Teen Beat. I moved into my first apartment with 5 roommates in Boston, where I worked 2 jobs to pay my $433 rent. I didn't mind my relative poverty. I actually relished in it. Here I was, a kid who grew up with everything-ish, and I was working my ass off, literally and figuratively. I had joined Weight Watchers and a gym. I was like Jenny from the Block, but in reverse. I was Lizzie from the Burbs. Used to have a lot, now I have a little, but no matter what, I knew where I came from. A house with 2 cars parked in the garage and 1 driver. I finally lost my virginity at age 23 to a Jewish lawyer named Josh, the night I saw Bend It Like Beckham. I was drunk and wanted to get it over with. He was drunk and wanted to bang. I don't know if we technically even had sex. I emailed him the week after and never heard from him again. In 2006, I moved to New York, where I got a job in television as a receptionist for a cable network no one watches. People from home thought I led a glamorous life. I lived in New York City. I had started doing stand-up comedy. I brought guys home once a year. A regular old Sex in the City. More like celibacy in the city. Time passed a little too fast. I turned 30. I remained single, interesting, fun, and broke. I turned 31. Same adjectives applied. And then it was time for my 10-year college reunion. I was on the fence about going. I couldn't afford it, and I was embarrassed by where I was in life. I didn't want to see a bunch of happy, successful married people, which seemed what most of my fellow members of Duke University class of 2001 had become. I was in a dead-end job and felt trapped. But I was also in the best shape of my life, running marathons, doing CrossFit, and competing in Tough Mudders. So, at least I looked good, even if I didn't always feel good. My friend Amanda emailed me from Texas to see if I was going. She and her fiancé, Todd, had secured a room at a Holiday Inn Express, and I could split it with them if I wanted. It would cost me $100 for the weekend. My credit card could afford that. I booked my plane ticket. I flew into North Carolina on a Friday afternoon during Lent. My sophomore year roommate, Corinne, was coming in from Houston with her husband, Mitchell, and without their toddler, an hour after I landed. I threw back a couple of beers at the airport while I waited for them to arrive. I'd given up booze for Lent, but I granted myself a dispensation. Catholic faith would take second place this weekend. I was buzzed by the time Corinne and Mitchell arrived. "Oh my God, Corinne!" I jumped up and hugged my former roommate, who had once seen me puke out the first floor window. "It's been 10 years. "Hey, Liz, yes it has." She stepped back and gestured towards her husband. "This is Mitchell. I've told him all about you." I didn't know if that was a good or bad thing. Mitchell and I hugged anyway. We picked up the rental car and drove to the Holiday Inn Express, where we met Amanda and Todd. And then we headed over to the Duke campus. I am freaking out, I explained to my friends. I'm the only one without my shit together. Oh, shut up, Liz. You live in New York and have no kids. You live the life, Corinne chastised me. Point taken. We parked the car and headed over to pick up our registration materials that proved we were alumni and not creepy old stalkers. We walked to the beer tent erected in the Cameron Stadium parking lot, where years before I'd camped out to see my classmates Shane Battier and Elton Brand play basketball. I grabbed a beer, took a deep breath, and downed that bad boy. Liquid courage was necessary if I was going to survive this weekend. Oh my God, is that you, Liz? My friend Catherine breathlessly shouted as she ran over to me. You look so good. Didn't I just see on Facebook that you ran a marathon? I never loved anyone more than I loved Catherine at that moment. Close, I explained. The marathon is next month. Oh my God, that's amazing. You look so good. How's New York? Before I could answer, Craig and his wife Gina approached me. I had attended their wedding the summer after we graduated. Holy shit, Liz, he exploded. It's been forever. How have you been? Gina added, damn girl, you look great. Wait, was this how my weekend was going to be? Full of compliments and positive energy and nice people? I couldn't afford therapy, but I probably wouldn't need it after this weekend anyway. My self-esteem problems were over. Now, if only a hot frat guy from back in the day would come over and talk to me.
Hey, Liz, what's going on?
I turned around and there was Ari. Hot frat guy might have been an overstatement. Intellectual, kind of cute, nerdy-looking Jew would have been a more accurate description. His glasses and mop of curly brown hair would have made him a prime candidate for a role in any Woody Allen movie set in 1940s Brooklyn. He was just shy of 5'10", but probably described himself as 6 foot on any dating websites. We had been in a few classes together and had a handful of mutual friends. We weren't close, but we'd always been friendly. Oh, hey, Ari. We hugged. Long time no see. Where are you these days? Ari and I were not connected on Facebook, so I had to pretend I didn't know where he lived, though Amanda had mentioned he was living in Seattle on the way over. Seattle. I've been there since graduation. I teach high school French. Ari and I spent the next 15 minutes talking while our classmates mingled nearby with their spouses and children. He mentioned he had broken up with his long-term girlfriend a few months prior. I acted surprised and sympathetic, as Amanda had mentioned that too. Ari was charming, flirtatious, and just good-looking enough. Not too hot, not too ugly. He was the just-right porridge for this Goldilocks. Since we had taken an English class together, I asked Ari what he was reading. Tree of Smoke by Dennis Johnson. I had just finished reading that pretentious book, and I only half understood... but was willing to pretend that I liked it. Was this fate? Was this God putting a man right in my path for marriage? Or even just sex? Sure, Mom would have preferred a Catholic boy for me, but Jesus was a Jew and she loved him. She'd love Ari too. Ari, isn't it weird that everyone is married? He leaned in towards me. And isn't it great that we're single? At that moment, I knew that it was on. I would not be leaving the reunion a virgin on the Duke campus. I was very happy I had decided to wax as a precautionary measure. Amanda came over to get me. We're headed over to the barbecue in Wallace Wade. Wanna come? I looked over at Ari. Sure, I responded. Ari jumped up. I'm going to meet Kevin. We're going to the gala tomorrow night, if I don't see you before then. I'm going to the gala too, I said. See you around, Liz. We hugged, then he walked away. I turned to Amanda. I think something is going to happen with Ari. She smiled. It's about time you get some. Saturday afternoon, I was in the hotel room with Amanda and her fiancé Todd, getting ready for the gala. What should I wear? I asked, pulling out the only dress I had bought. A leopard print Ralph Lauren number I had picked up for $50 from TJ Maxx. That, Amanda suggested, pointing to the dress. And shoes? Perfect. I wanted to ask Todd if he thought Ari would like my red or blue lace panties more. But I had only just met him yesterday. We met Corinne and her husband Mitchell and drove over to campus, where the gala was taking place under a big tent. There would be food, dancing, wine, and Ari. Ari, looking very teacherly in khakis, a long-sleeve white button-down shirt, and a red and blue striped tie, swept over to our table where we were drinking wine. Hey, ladies, what's up? Corinne nudged Amanda. We're going to grab food. Ari and I were left alone. As much as one can be in a sea of hundreds of alumni from years that ended in one or six. He sat across from me and put his hand on my knee. You never told me what you thought of Tree of Smoke. His hand inched higher on my thigh. I struggled to maintain my composure as I was getting turned on by his touch and literary prowess. The hand went up another inch. It was, Ari leaned in and kissed me. Well written. Let's dance, Ari said, taking my hand and leading me to the dance floor, where a 12-piece band was playing a medley of R&B, disco, and top 40. Where are you staying? Ari whispered in my ear as we grooved to Crazy in Love. In a room with Amanda and Todd at the Holiday Inn. That won't work. I guess you can come back with me. We danced for a while longer, and then our crew headed to a new cocktail bar downtown that did not exist when we were students. As the bar was about to close at 2 a.m., Amanda pulled me aside. Are you coming back to the hotel? I glanced over at Ari. I think I'll go back with him. Good girl. Be safe. She kissed me on the cheek. We piled into the rental car, and Todd dropped Ari and me off back where Ari was staying. Back was an air mattress in a spare bedroom at our friend Kevin's house. Kevin still lived in the area with his wife, Carly, who was 8 months pregnant with their first child. This was a slight step up from the extra-long twin beds where many of my friends had lost their V-cards 10 years before, while their roommate pretended to sleep one bed over. My flight leaves at 8:30 tomorrow morning, so Kevin is taking me to the airport at 7. He can probably drop you off at your hotel after. Hope that's cool with you, Ari explained, outlining the formalities of our exchange. Yeah. I felt like a lady of the night whose client was trading in a get-one-free coupon. What, he had not yet bought anything? Yeah. Sure, that's fine with... Before I had a chance to finish, Ari threw me down on the air mattress. Luckily, it did not pop. We kissed for 10 minutes, and some clothes came off. Ari, I need to take out my contacts. The bathroom's down the hall. I wrapped a sheet around my body and tiptoed so I didn't wake up Kevin and Carly. I removed my contacts and returned to the spare bedroom, where I expected Ari would be waiting for me with open arms and open legs. Instead, his back welcomed me. Hey, Ari, I whispered. As I tried to climb into the air mattress, move over. I waited for him to turn around and greet me with a ravenous kiss. Instead, I got a very loud snore. Are you fucking kidding me? Despite my best efforts, I would remain a virgin at Duke. Some things never change.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of No, You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.